I'm making a slight change here. So Dr. Charlie White has to leave after his talk to catch his flight. So we are just switching his talk, and he's going to talk next. And the topic is effect of tillage on soil water content and soil quality of soil under dryland management.
Thank you, ma'am.
I have a confession to make. It's that I wish I was Charlie White. He and I were graduate students together at the University of Maryland, and Charlie's just a very gifted soil scientist. So I'm going to try to convince. Thanks, Charlie. I appreciate that. All right. So I have a plane to catch. So this is going to be fast, and maybe you'll all get back exactly on schedule. So this is the, I'm reporting on data that was gathered by my graduate student, Carlos Martinez. And so we're sorry that Carlos couldn't be here this year. He was with us last year. So this is the data from his research. So Carlos showed up at some plots about 40 miles north of where my university is located, because at a Texas A&M AgriLife facility, they had instituted a no-till, that's NT, versus a conventional till experiment. And they found in the first few years of the experiment that a couple times the no-till treatment, you can see there labeled with the A's, gave better yields for either cotton or sorghum than the conventional tillage treatment did. So they were excited about that, but they had limited resources to measure the soil, and so they asked Carlos and I to show up, and so we were happy to do it. So there's the yields for no-till and conventional till in the years before we showed up. There's also the rainfall in centimeters, and you can see down below that the average at this site is around 84 centimeters. So it was dry for those years, and 1 year, in a couple years right there in the middle, particularly dry, and those were the years where they had measured this difference in the two tillage types, kind of despite the fact that that the experiment was only begun in 2011. By the way, we were working on a very fine soil, the Victoria clay, which is kind of an analog of the Houston black, a fine smectitic hyperthermic sodic haplostert. So our experimental design, this was determined before we showed up, and it occurred in, there were two blocks. The blocks were there not because of any perceived environmental gradient that the folks who put the experiment in had observed. They just kind of put things in rows like that, so they were blocked, but not in response to a perceived environmental gradient. The treatment factor was tillage with two levels, conventional and no-till. And what happened was, in any particular year, all of the plots in one block would be in either cotton or sorghum, and then they would switch it the following year. So it's just a cotton-sorghum rotation. And you can see that the no-till versus conventional till plots are arranged in an alternating fashion. It's not randomized. They're not independently assigned and all that kind of stuff. So essentially what this does is it makes our study a case study. We can't really extrapolate our results to any other Victoria clay sites or similar sites. And that's a good lesson for graduate students. I've been to several talks this conference that are set up the same way. But the problem is, if you do it this way, then your scope of inference is really limited to your plots only. So this is a case study. So we had two very simple hypotheses. One was that we get those increased yields under no-till because of improved soil quality, which is a bit of a stretch because it's so new. But the other hypothesis was that we were getting those improved yields under no-till because of increased soil moisture, because of the no-till. So we had some simple methods. In the spring of 2016, which was 5 years after the experiment was started, we showed up with some coring devices. In each plot, we took 20 subsamples and homogenized them and sent the composite sample away to the Cornell Soil Health Assessment Laboratory. You're probably familiar with what they do, but obviously organic matter, aggregate stability, plant available water. They have the respiration test, which is the equivalent of the Solvita. A few others that I can't remember right now. They use the Morgan extraction for their chemical tests. I'm not sure that the Morgan is that insightful for where we are, but our colleagues that I was talking about actually did Mellick 3 down there, which is. So I just decided to go with the Cornell Morgan and go with our colleagues Mellick 3. And then to measure soil moisture, we used a neutron probe inserted to four different depths. We had two replicates in each place, in each plot. They were kind of not randomly assigned because of just the constraints of the agronomic treatment. So those two dots that's in every plot basically represents where we were able to get measurements with our neutron probe. We did that all year in 2015, and then unfortunately just for a few months in 2016. So we analyzed our data, the soil quality data, two ways. The first thing is we just did an analysis across the two blocks to see if the two blocks there actually was an environmental gradient. And then the second analysis, we had tillage as a treatment factor, and we used block as the blocking factor. And then for soil moisture, because we did find something that was an environmental gradient between the two blocks, we used tillage as a treatment and block as a treatment factor, too, for our soil moisture analysis. And then we had a repeated measurement aspect to it with respect to depth and time simultaneously. And I'm always indebted to our statistician at A&M Kingsville for being able to program that. So here's our results from comparing the two blocks. We've got the north-south versus the south block. And these are significant differences. You can see the p-values there. There are significant differences that may not be very important, sand 49 versus 53%, but it's there. But the available water is different, 0.24 centimeters per centimeter versus 0.15 centimeters per centimeter. So then we ran, so our second statistical analysis was we simply ran the ANOVA to see what the difference was between tillage and no tillage, and we didn't come up with a lot. And that's probably not a surprise because we were only, the treatments have only been in there for 5 years, but we figured we'd do it. We got a difference with respect to the Morgan extractable P and the Morgan extractable magnesium, and that was it. Now, Cornell also offers a rating or an index for each of the things that it measures, plus an overall one. And so because of the really heightened phosphorus contents that occurred with no tillage, those heightened phosphorus contents are seen as a kind of environmental potential problem. So that meant that as far as the phosphorus rating goes, the no tillage was given a lower score, and that translated into a lower overall quality rating for our no-till plots there. So no-tillage gives us a worse soil quality after 5 years, according to this scheme. So what about soil moisture? So in 2015, with our analysis, we got a three-way interaction, month by depth by block, and we got a two-way interaction, a tillage by month interaction. That's bolded because I'm going to show you the stuff in bold. I'm not going to bother to show you the other stuff because we're interested in tillage here, the effect of tillage. In 2016, we got some other interactions, but we got a main effect of tillage. So 2015 data, here's what it looks like. These are neutron counts. And essentially, we're getting exactly the same numbers of neutron counts and soil moisture for all the months except for two. You can see May and July there, 5 and 7, have a little star. So that's when there was a significant difference. And in this case, no tillage was giving us a little bit less soil moisture. But it's one of those things that might be statistically distinct, but does it actually matter at the levels that we had there? In 2016, we got an opposite response. The main effect of tillage was to basically always give us greater soil moisture under no tillage. Now, this wasn't throughout the whole year, unfortunately. It was just through April through June. But it's that basically what we're doing is we're capturing this drying down period from kind of the wet soils in the spring to the dry soils that occur in the summertime. So to summarize, with respect to soil quality, we got increased magnesium contents with conventional tillage and increased phosphorus contents with no tillage, and overall decrease in soil quality, at least the way the rating goes with no till. With soil moisture, we got lower soil moisture in 2 months and higher soil moisture with no-till in the 3 months that we were able to look at. So during the period of our study, 2015 through 2016, no-till wasn't found to consistently increase soil moisture. And since the creation of the experiment in 2011, no-till has not measurably increased soil quality. Now, what's happened at our field site since we showed up is that it became very wet. 2015, the average rainfall, remember, in our area is about 80 centimeters. But in 2015, there was 130 centimeters of rain. So we went from really, really dry to really, really wet the moment that my student set his foot on the field, right? And then 2016 has ended up being a year of basically normal precipitation. So it's possible that in dry years, you know, the historic data would seem to indicate that no tillage can give a benefit. But Mother Nature had changed the weather by the time we showed up. So it's just the limit of only coming for a short period of time. Also, the cotton sorghum rotation that we have, it provides very little biomass. So even though you have a no-till treatment, the soil surface is not very covered. So it's getting beaten on by the sun all the time, and you're not really saving that much moisture, perhaps, with that little bit of extra residue that you have on the surface. So maybe we need to wait more years for more residue to build up. Or I've speculated maybe we need to do something at the first year that no-tillage gets implemented to grow a really large biomass crop, as large as we could, and get the soil covered and kind of prime the system that way. The nice thing is that no-till never has given, in this experiment so far, yields that are worse than conventional tillage. So the neat thing about no-till is that there are fewer inputs, and what that means is it's cheaper. So even though you might only get a measurable benefit from no-till during particular dry years, and that's just speculation, but the neat thing is that according to an economic analysis done by our colleagues, this is Matthew Bean, who graduated from the College Station campus. He's got an economic analysis at the end of his master's thesis that indicates a very clear benefit to doing no-till economically. So very good. Thank you for your time.